Welcome to Canadian Politique. I'm Cameron Bishop.
I'm Leanne Goodman.
I'm Mike McDougall.
And today on the show, we talk... What are you laughing about?
Why does Mike sound so depressed when he says hello? I'm Mike McDougall.
Okay, we'll do it again.
All right.
We'll do it live.
Fuck it. We'll do it live. We'll do it live. All right, here we go. Welcome to Canadian Politique. I'm Cameron Bishop.
I'm Leanne Goodman.
I'm Mike McDougall.
And today on the show, we're feigning enthusiasm at the introduction of our podcast. We're going to be talking about Trump's clearing of the Saudis in the death of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Also, the pro-pipeline... Yes, I did nail it. See, folks, if you've been listening... I can now pronounce three-syllable last names. Pro-pipeline protests against Prime Minister Trudeau in Calgary and bailing out the media. The federal government tosses a lifeline to the Fourth Estate and the Conservatives go wild. So, it's been a couple of weeks. We've all had a time to let the midterms sink in. Trump is handling it just as you would expect. He's still having his meltdown. But... one thing he hasn't done is change tack on how he's decided that he's going to handle the Saudi Arabian government. On Wednesday, he released a statement in the to comment on the Jamal Khashoggi killing. He was a journalist with the Washington Post. Donald Trump released a statement. I'm going to read the statement, and then we're going to play a couple clips before we chat about it. This is an excerpt of what Trump said about the Saudi Arabian government and whether or not they were complicit in the killing of the journalist. Representatives of Saudi Arabia say that Jamal Khashoggi was, quote, an enemy of the state and a member of the Muslim Brotherhood, but my decision is in no way based on that. This is an unacceptable and horrible crime. King Salman and Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman vigorously deny any knowledge of the planning or execution of the murder of Mr. Khashoggi. Our intelligence agencies continue to assess all information, but it could very well be that the Crown Prince had knowledge of this tragic event. Maybe he did, and maybe he didn't. That being said, we may never know all the facts surrounding the murder of Mr. Jamal Khashoggi. In any case, our relationship is with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. They have been a great ally in our very important fight against Iran. The United States intends to remain a steadfast partner of Saudi Arabia to ensure the interests of our country, Israel, and all other partners in the world. It is our paramount goal to fully eliminate the threat of terrorism throughout the world. Yes, and the way you eliminate terrorism is by allying yourself with the Crown Prince, who had a journalist hacked to death with a bone saw and is relatively responsible for the starvation of millions in Yemen, if you've seen those horror shots. But let's, before we talk, I want to run through a bit of a clip, because one of the things that came out after this statement that the president released was that he said that, you know, his business interests in Saudi Arabia didn't actually guide him on anything. In fact, this was all just above board about principle and a putting America first. So let's listen to the president then on the campaign trail versus now about Saudi Arabia.
The Washington Post, in a statement, put out a statement. They said that you're putting your personal interests, your commercial interests...
Well, I have nothing to do with Saudi. Just so you understand, yeah. I don't make deals with Saudi Arabia.
I deal with the Saudis.
I don't have money from Saudi Arabia.
I don't think anybody sells much more real estate than I do to the Japanese, the Saudis, etc. They buy the most expensive apartments in the world that I happen to build. And I know the people, and I like the people.
I have nothing to do with Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia, and I get along great with all of them. They buy apartments from me, they spend $40 million, $50 million. Am I supposed to dislike them? I like them very much.
I have nothing to do with Saudi Arabia.
I love the Saudis. Many are in this building.
I have no business whatsoever with Saudi Arabia. Couldn't care less.
Saudi Arabia, I like the Saudis. They're very nice. I make a lot of money with them. They buy all sorts of my stuff. All kinds of toys from Trump. They pay me... millions and hundreds of millions.
And now, let's hear a little bit more from Trump.
No, they didn't conclude. They did not come to a conclusion. They have feelings certain ways, but they didn't. I have the report. You can ask Mike, they have not concluded. Nobody's concluded. I don't know if anyone's going to be able to conclude that the Crown Prince did it. But I will say this, I don't know. But whether he did or whether he didn't, he denies it vehemently. His father denies it, the king, vehemently. The CIA doesn't say they did it. they do point out certain things, and in pointing out those things, you can conclude that maybe he did or maybe he didn't. But there's no, that was another part of the false reporting, because a lot of you said yesterday that they said he did it. Well, they didn't say that. They said he might have done it. That's a big difference. But they're vehemently denying it, and we have hundreds of thousands of jobs. Do people really want me to give up hundreds of thousands of jobs? And frankly, if we went by this standard, we wouldn't be able to have anybody as an ally. I hate the crime. I hate what's done. I hate the cover-up. And I will tell you this, the Crown Prince hates it more than I do. And they have vehemently denied it. The CIA points it both ways. It's, you know, it's, and as I said, maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But I will say very strongly that it's a very important ally.
So that's Trump and the prince, and trying to figure that rat warren of comments out is something. But I also want you to know that Trump does have an idea about who is responsible for the death of Jamal Khashoggi. And I think this is a very important, an important discovery for Trump. And I think we all need to hear it.
Who should be held accountable?
Maybe the world should be held accountable, because the world is a vicious place. World is a very, very vicious place.
Yes. I don't know about you, but the last time I checked, our prime minister wasn't hacking journalists to death, and the governor general wasn't out there killing kids in Yemen. So is this Canada's fault that Jamal Khashoggi is dead? I ask you, Leanne.
No. I love it. You see, just today, like just recently, the Democrats have announced they're going to investigate Trump's financial ties to Saudi Arabia when they get control of the House in January. So he's going to just lose it, right? Because he's been contradicting himself, as you showed with those clips. You know, he said he has no financial interest in Saudi Arabia, but he has also boasted about making millions of dollars from the Saudis. Also, this bullshit, hundreds of millions of jobs, is another thing he's just made up, of course. It just depresses me. I'm sorry.
I guess here's a question. Let me ask you this, an open question to both Mike and Leanne. What is the risk when Trump does something like this? When he clears, when the CIA director apparently has a recording of the Crown Prince ordering the murder of Khashoggi, when the intelligence services have heard the clips of the killing that went on in the embassy, the consulate in Turkey. What does it say if you're Vladimir Putin or Kim Jong-un or, the House of Saud, or frankly, any despot in the world? What does it say when the U.S. government, led by the President of the United States, gives a pass to the killing of journalists in such a public way?
I think it's even more than journalists. I think what it says is that the president of the United States can be bought, right? I mean, we all know politics and the way politics works. There's kind of the backroom deals that you make with people, but then there's the public statements that you make that maybe even contradict what's really happening. But there's that kind of face-saving, you know, what you tell the people and then what really happens. But the fact that he's just kind of bumbling along, you know, he made that tweet. I don't know if everybody saw it. On the 21st, he tweeted, oil prices are getting lower. Great. It's just like a big tax cut for America. What he's doing there is, like, Trump really, in his whole presidency, he's accomplished one thing. And that, like, one thing that a president could point out that is like a presidential accomplishment, and that is getting a tax cut passed.
So for the rich.
But I'm not saying that the accomplishment is a good thing. What I'm saying is he did accomplish that. Like, his President Donald Trump did get a tax cut passed. And that's like the one thing that he's done. And so to try to basically say, like, you know, hey, remember that one good thing I did? It's I'm still doing it by giving you oil prices, right? But I mean, what he's showing is that he could be bought. And he cited, you know, the concern is him not believing his own intelligence. Not his intelligence, like his own intelligence agencies. And he did that with Putin as well, when he said, yeah, I know, you know, the intelligence agency said that Russia did hack the election, but Putin denied it. So he kind of has this thing where he publicly will side with, you know, terrible dictators over his own intelligence. And I think that's more the story. Khashoggi is a story, but it's this kind of theme that Trump has, where he doesn't trust his own intelligence services, but he does trust the word of, you know, people that have demonstrated that they are dictators and that they, you know, abuse their power and abuse force. And that's the big concern for me.
Well, I think when you say that he's been bought,
also,
I was just going to say, when you say he's been bought, I don't know if anybody remembers, but in 2016, when he was running for the Republican presidential nomination, Prince Al-Waleed bin Talal said on Twitter that he had, and then he subsequently said it in media, that he had bailed Trump out at least twice and asked if he needed a third bailout because he was yeah. fumbling all over. So you're absolutely right. He can be bought. But, you know, the problem is that he continues. I mean, first of all, he's basically put a target on the backs of journalists in his own country. And I think he's doing that to a greater extent around the world. If you don't like the coverage, you just kill them. Number one, but
or take their press pass away
if you're Jim Acosta. Mm-hmm. But, you know, at the same time, he can be bought. And I think that the fact that he can lie and get away with such impunity, I if that's the baseline that the U.S. government or politics is being reduced to, then we've got a bigger problem, because that means that Republican or Democrat or whoever winds up in the White House, you know, whether next term or, you know, 10 terms from now, the baseline for what the public is going to believe and accept has been so grossly lowered that it's actually infected the entire system. But my main concern right now is what it does to journalists that are on the ground trying to report in Yemen or Sudan or North Korea or wherever. And that's why I'd like to, like, Leanne, would you feel comfortable covering the life in the White House under Trump's America as you did under Obama? Would you feel comfortable going overseas? Like, what would you think?
I would feel nervous right now working for the New York Times, like, especially when you consider that newsroom that got shot up, was it in Pittsburgh?
Yep.
Like, he stokes all this stuff all the time. The media are the enemy of the people. Even when he's absolutely wrong, he'll say it again and again and again. And he doesn't seem to care that one guy came out and planted all the pipe bombs, and he didn't care what happened at the synagogue. So, yeah, I would be actually nervous working for the New York Times right now. And, in fact, apparently they've had to undergo mass shooting preparation training, the people at the New York Times. They're afraid. They're well aware that some lunatic could walk into that newsroom and shoot them up, who's been stoked by Trump. And, you know, the other reason why he is always siding against the intelligence agencies and suggesting they don't really have it right, and this crazy dictator has obviously been, you know, unfairly maligned, is because the intelligence agencies have all the information on him in Russia. So it's also in his interest to consistently and continuously suggest that the U.S. intelligence community cannot be trusted, that their information is just guesswork, right? That's part of what that's about.
Well,
he's a really vile human being. You see, he was asked yesterday what he's most thankful for, and basically, you know, because it was Thanksgiving in the States, and basically what he's most thankful for is himself.
Yep.
Another really concerning area, though, is, Cameron, you touched on it with the lying and about how you said, you know, how the bar is being lowered. I mean, let's look at this very podcast that we're doing right now. Every week we have a story that we basically talk about Trump, and we laugh and we talk about his lies, and, you know, we act like we're just in disbelief with all of this. But, you know, if this podcast happened during, say, the Obama administration or the Bush administration or Clinton or Reagan or anybody, and we took this attitude, we'd be considered an extremist conspiracy theory pod, right? But the fact that these lies are so easily debunked and no one seems to care, that is greatly disturbing. It's that is even worse than anything that he's actually done, because any other president, if, like, to expose their lies, either took like a Woodward and Bernstein type of reporting, or you'd just be like Alex Jones just shouting at the wall, like, oh, yeah, Obama's trying to take, you know, he was born in Kenya or whatever, right? These lies, like, they're really easy to disprove. It's like, no, like, it's right here. Like, I Googled it and here's the answer. Nobody cares.
Yeah. And you know what else too, you know, even when he makes comments that then become a headline, doesn't seem to be a response. And we'll talk more about the media later in the show, but there doesn't seem to be any sort of, to your point, Mike, there's no real, accuracy editor that's going in. Because, I mean, for example, it says Trump says CIA did not conclude Saudi Arabia responsible for Khashoggi killing or something like that. Well, we know that's a lie. And he's technically, I can't believe I'm going to say this, correct, that the CIA rather would not conclude anything. He will basically, or a CIA report will basically say, we have reason to believe that X occurred on such and such a date, and here's the evidence to back it up. But you're quite right. He's quite willing to be in touch with and to trust Russian intelligence as embodied by Sergei Kislyak, and have all these back channels to some of the world's most odious individuals. But his own intelligence community, he undercuts at every turn in the media. He's also doing it as well. It's quite a disaster. But I guess my thing is I don't know what the media response should be. I mean, if the man does, you know, or the Democrats, do the Democrats should they release the Khashoggi report when the Intelligence Committee gets it sometime in 2019?
Well, I don't believe nobody cares. I want to dispute Mike on that. I think people really care. His base doesn't give a shit. He doesn't give a shit because he just keeps telling the same lies every day because he knows that his base will believe anything he says. But people certainly care. We're seeing fact-checking every day in almost every, you know, the Washington Post, the Toronto Star with Daniel Dale, New York Times. There's constant fact-checking. CNN, the major American networks, the New Yorker. Like, it's hard not to read now a story where they don't make pretty clear that that is bullshit. So people do care. His base doesn't care, and he doesn't care. And also, there are so many lies told a day, and he just keeps them churning them out. I think that's by design too. He's just constantly throwing out bullshit all day long, all day, every day. That the media is having to scurry to go to the next one, and then the next one, and then the next one. You know what I mean? There's only so many reporters who can, like, newsrooms don't have an infinite supply of reporters and editors who can stick with every story all the way to the bitter end, and I think he knows that. So I dispute that no one cares. I think a lot of people care.
I would just add one thing. Daniel Dale made a good point this week. He said that, because you're right, he does overwhelm, Trump overwhelms with lying, whether it's about the CIA report, about Khashoggi, or anything really, including the tax cut that he said was going to be passed for the middle class before the midterm election when Congress wasn't even in session and there was no possibility of that even happening. Another lie. But Daniel Dale made a good point. He said his lies, because Daniel Dale, for those that don't know, of the Toronto Star, I encourage you to follow him on Twitter. I encourage you to read what he does, because he has basically cataloged and calls out every single lie that Donald Trump engages in at every time. And when somebody asked him, well, how do you keep up? And he said, well, it basically, the pattern is he just repeats the same lies over and over to varying degrees. So when he's at a rally, he'll talk about, you know, the number of steel mills that are opening. Untrue. You know, he'll say, well, there's 8 new steel mills opening ever since
12.
Or 12 or whatever. And Daniel Dale will write something like, actually, that's not true. There was one minor expansion that was announced by such and such. And so you're right. He does overwhelm with lies, but there is a base of them. A large majority of those lies are just regurgitated on a regular basis. Anyhow, let's actually, because we were talking about the media and in tribute to Mr. Khashoggi and the fine journalist that he was, let's talk a little bit about what happened here in Canada this week. The federal government announced in their fall economic update that they would be investing $595 million over 5 years to help the media in Canada. Measures include a refundable tax credit to news outlets, a 15% tax credit to new digital subscribers, and it will also allow nonprofit media organizations to give tax receipts to their donors. Now, this is timely because obviously the media, in a lot of respects, is, you know, a victim, and I don't pretend to know it as well as Leanne will, but obviously a victim of a changing demographic in terms of how we access our news. There's obviously a huge undercurrent of mistrust with the media. The conservatives have certainly gone out on a limb on a number of different things. I mean, there was columns a couple weeks back that said the conservatives intended in 2019 to go to war with the media. And of course, what do they do? What do they do in question period all this week? Well, they've been bashing the government, saying that this is basically making the media, you know, some proxy of the Liberal Party. And Michelle Rempel, here's a lovely quote from our Michelle Rempel, Member of Parliament for Calgary, pain in the ass. You know what? She tweeted, journalists are the victims of the Trudeau-sponsored content fund. They're all going to have to work extra hard to prove their objectivity in an era where everyone is a content creator. RIP free speech. Leanne, is this the death of free speech? And what do you think about the bailout?
What an idiot. No, they just saved the newspaper industry. Now, I have a lot of opinions about how the Canadian newspaper industry is fucked up. It's run and always has been by a bunch of white men who are very small-minded, who were too busy having these crazy cockfights among themselves back when the newspaper war really started heating up in the early '00s and the National Post came on the scene. And what were those all those guys doing, who, by the way, are still in charge of most of those newspapers? They're all fighting among themselves. The Sun didn't want anything that the Star might get. The Star was fighting the Globe. The Globe and the Post were fighting each other. They're all fighting each other, big, huge, white guy cockfight, when this huge digital tsunami was bearing right down on them, where they should have been collaborating and they should have been thinking of ways to monetize the business the way a lot of newspapers did in the States, by the way, including the New York Times and the Washington Post, biggest newspaper rivalry in the world. In a lot of areas, they came together to figure out how to monetize and what to do about the fact that people were no longer wanting to read newspapers on newsprint. They wanted to read them online. We failed miserably as an industry in Canada to tackle that problem and to come together to figure out a way to deal with it. So what the government did yesterday, and I don't care if it had been a Liberal government or a Conservative government, if you care anything about democracy, and if you believe that a healthy, thriving, especially local news industry is important to the health of a democracy, then yesterday was a great day. And it doesn't matter whether it was the Liberals or the Conservatives or the NDP who did it. And if you look at the details of this announcement, it's going to be very arm's length how they're going to figure out who's going to get the help.
Yeah, there's
they're
a panel.
Assigning an independent right? Completely arm's length from the government.
Well,
it's
hold
the
on,
way
Leanne.
Done it in
hold on. Hold on. Before you go on, I do want to say we have a comment from Michelle Rempel about that panel. Member of Parliament for Canada, for Calgary, pain in the ass. Trudeau has just nationalized new journalism. The panel who will select who gets money based on journalistic standards will be set by him in both accounts, no doubt. Any journalist that takes this money will no longer be independent. Thus dies journalism.
Yeah, I read that one.
What do you think? Anyways,
she's out of her mind.
She is out of her mind.
She's wrong. She's out of her mind. They've just saved a very vital industry, one that's particularly vital to the health of a democracy. That should be something the Conservatives are cheering for, but they're not. It's worked in Scandinavia, it's worked in Ireland, and it's going to work here, and it's going to stave off disaster, but who knows for how long, because, you know, we've done a terrible job figuring out how to, in Canada, how to work together to figure out to accept the fact that people do not want to buy newspapers anymore and figure out how to stay in business without that. I think it's good news. I don't think it's the end of the nightmare, but it certainly is going to stave it off for a while. And Michelle Rempel, honestly, Michelle Rempel can blow me.
Yeah, okay.
That's all I have to say.
All right. Nice comment from Leanne. Mike, thoughts on the bailout?
I'm all for it. I mean, I'm cool with, I don't think that it's going to affect, the integrity of journalists. I look at it more from a consumer point of view. I like the 15% tax credit.
I do too.
For consumers, because like right now I'm on, the Toronto Star, and they want $15 a month if you sign up for an annual fee. Now, $15 a month for a newspaper, yeah, it's worth it. But we all have these small, like, okay, so I've got my Netflix subscription. I've got my Amazon Prime subscription. I've got my, I subscribe to The Athletic. I subscribe to the Toronto Star. It all adds up, right? I mean, my media content subscription per month is, it's over $100. So getting $15 back, cool. Like, I'm cool with that. I don't mind paying for content, but also I better get content, right? So I kind of have I'm not trying to plug The Athletic, but I mean, if you're into sports, it's really worth the $30 a year. Like, it really is. Mm. It's amazing. But other content, you know, it better be good. Like the Toronto Star, I'm curious how good it is going to be, because I feel like the Star has gone down in quality recently. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. I'm going to pay my $15 a month and see how it goes. But if you don't pay an annual fee, like if you subscribe monthly, it's $20 a month. I find that pretty expensive. So
that's way too high. That's
it's way too high. Like 10. 10 yeah. seems to be for me. Yeah. Like I'll pay that's $10 a month for something. Well, they're starting at 20.
If they're getting so
right, start and get people in and then up it if you've got a good buy.
Exactly.
Right? You don't start at $20 a month. It's a dumb move.
Well, and what I want to know is if they're doing this and if they're and with the bailout rolling out, does this mean we're actually going to see more investments in newsrooms rather across the country? Or are they just going to take this and not invest in investigative journalists, not invest in the things that would actually drive people to them? I mean, are they just going to perpetuate the same thing?
Well, I think there's going to be some safeguards in place to ensure that they don't do what Post Media did, which was when Paul Godfrey stripped and shrunk all those newsrooms and fired all those reporters, and then all the executives got the big, huge, giant, grotesque pay raises, right?
Yeah.
But it kills me that Paul Godfrey's so happy about this. Like, wow.
I mean, if there's one guy
happy, it makes me almost suspicious.
Well, if there's one guy that should be out on his ass, it's Paul Godfrey.
He should be disqualified from getting a dime. And I'm sorry to say this because I know there's a lot of good people at Post Media, but their management of that company has been absolutely appalling. And they do not deserve government money in particular, but I mean, the Post reporters do. The Post media reporters do, obviously. But you know what I mean?
Yeah, no,
Paul
I hear
Godfrey,
you.
You make me sick.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I'm on a rant. I don't even know
it's
where
fine.
I was. I'm still hearing. It sounds to me like we're in a lumber mill. I swear.
Well,
you,
we are.
One
it's,
of you is sitting
actually
in
maybe
a lumber
what you're
mill
hearing.
Right now. I can hear a chainsaw.
Maybe what you're hearing is this sound effect. Oh. Now, you're probably wondering what that sound effect is. That's a bone saw, for those of us, for those wondering. That is what was used by Mr. Trump's friends in the Saudi House of Saud to dismember Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi. So maybe that's what you're hearing,
Leanne.
Wow.
Yes.
Nice and slow and painful. What a gang that we're allied with. And by the way...
And the other thing, sorry to go back to that for a minute, when he said, oh, the CIA doesn't know, they vehemently deny it. Didn't the story come out just yesterday where they have him on tape?
Yes,
where they have
that's what I
saying,
said.
Okay, the job is done.
Yeah, he basically said, kill Khashoggi. Oh, no, there's nothing here.
Well, he refuses to listen to it. Remember, he said that, I'm not going to listen to it, so.
Well, he's too bad. Yeah, it's hard to listen to anything when your head's up your ass and your tongue's in a bucket of chicken. But I want to say one thing about the conservative hatred of this media bailout, because I just did a quick search before I came in today. I want to just point out something. Right before the 2015 election, there was a really good opinion piece written by Warren Bell in the National Observer. And what he talked about, this is just going to walk through a few stats, that Harper had over 3,000 government spin doctors who were doing everything from his planned photo ops to his online stuff to his propaganda outlets with local media and often softball ethnic media outlets that they would favor for his carefully staged interviews. He basically, remember when he tried to he thought about building his own White House press office, or what similar to what Ford has done in, Prime Minister's press office, similar to what Ford has done at the legislature. He was going to have a prime minister's, and there really kind of wasn't there like 24/7 or something like that? 24/7 was his little media channel.
It was funny.
And what Warren Bell says, and he says, Harper has been busy creating a parallel political information machine, quote, using the corporate funds his party receives to create what one communications expert has called a public relations state. But, you know, conservatives are so concerned about an independent media, but they didn't say much when Harper was cutting the budget of the CBC by 18.9%. 9% over 10 years from $1.3 billion down to $1.03 billion by the time they got booted from office. He pumped the CBC board full of every conservative donor he could think of. In fact, I'm looking right now at the faces of nine conservative donors who were sitting on the CBC board, including the president of CBC at the time, Hubert Lacroix, who was very pro-business. There's nothing wrong with being pro-business, but was not a huge fan of the national broadcaster. They complain, people like Michelle Rempel, Pierre Poilievre, Andrew Scheer, the entire ilk. They've all got a chip on their shoulder about media bias. Well, in 2010, CBC management, of course, just like they are now, are attacked for what they call a liberal bias. So they commissioned a study to examine if that was in fact the case. The study showed, in fact, that the CBC gave more airtime to conservative MPs and MPs in all other parties, 65% of airtime, and more than private broadcasters as well. Of course, maybe if people like Tony Clement weren't sending dick pics, they wouldn't be in the media that often. And maybe if they weren't going to alt-right rallies and dry-humping rebel media, they also wouldn't be getting bad reviews by media. And also, just in terms of what we invest per capita among public funding, among a number of industrialized nations, we spend $34 per Canadian on the CBC. In Norway, they spend 164, euros or kronas for their public broadcasters. So, you know, I find it a little bit odd when I hear the conservatives complaining about an independent press when they did everything possible to marginalize, dismiss it, ignore it, be hostile to it. And they're trying this tack that they've sworn that they aren't going to pursue, which is going to war with the media in the lead up to the election. Pretty sad. But I will take no lessons from the likes of Michelle Rempel or anybody else when it comes to what we should or shouldn't be doing to protect the Fourth Estate in this country. So anyhow, now, next up, let's go back to the home province of Alberta, and I'm going to ask everybody on this call, Leanne, who hates oil and pipelines. We're all owners.
I like olive oil.
Yeah, well, and I like avocado oil. It's fantastic. So here's the thing. We are all owners, so I'm going to ask us all to put that hat on. We're all owners of the TMX pipeline that was purchased by the federal government, the Trans Mountain Pipeline, in order to try and get it constructed. By the way, folks, We've seen some of our investment actually getting some good returns on the market. Just saying. Anyhow, so the Prime Minister was in Alberta yesterday, and faced with 2,000 or so protesters in downtown Calgary demanding that he take action on the pipeline right now. He met with business groups who were not all that excited to see him or speak with him, but were very polite. Just some quick stats here without Trans Mountain being, or sorry, people are also blasting the Prime Minister rather for ignoring, they say, the price differential in terms of Canadian crude oil. Right now, that differential means that we're losing about $80 million a day, which is equal to about $30 billion a year. So, you know, of course, Alberta, and I'm a proud now displaced Albertan. I grew up in Fort McMurray. I'm a big fan of the oil sands. They got me through school, put food on our table, all of that stuff. But I get really tired of listening to people bitch and moan who are of the conservative bend when they talk about Trudeau and Notley and their failure to get a pipeline built. Just as a reminder, the conservatives did nothing in 10 years to get a pipeline built. In fact, they failed at every turn. And I'm going to play you a clip of Notley in the House or in the legislature the other day, because I think she says it best. She's answering Jason Kenney, who was a longtime minister under Harper and a longtime opposition MP. But just listen to what Notley has to say, and then we'll discuss.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. You know, the leader of the official opposition was part of a government that oversaw the failure of Northern Gateway. And here's what the Federal Court of Appeal had to say about the quality of work by the former Conservative government. It was like, this government's mistakes were, quote, immense, massive in size, and affecting so many diverse groups and geographic habitats in so many different ways, end quote, Mr. Speaker. That is a level of incompetence that is really quite jaw-dropping. So in the world of apologies, my question is, do they have one to offer?
Yeah, why is it that the Liberals and the NDP, Rachel Notley and Justin Trudeau, are the ones that have to apologize when we have provided, the federal government has provided $250 million to Alberta in 2016 to help offset the impacts of low oil prices? They've bought a $4.5 billion pipeline. $700 million in infrastructure funding. Notley is willing to go and buy trains to add 120,000 to 140,000 barrel capacity per day of oil export if the federal government can't do anything more. I mean, it's not Rachel Notley's fault, and it's not Trudeau's fault that they can't get a fucking pipeline through, folks. It's not their fault. Where your hero, Stephen Harper in Calgary, and Jason Kenney had 10 goddamn years and did nothing. Like, what is the problem here, Alberta? Very angry.
Well, it's just like, what, I'm not sure what they were protesting. Like, what more did you want from the man? I actually think, and I don't want to get into this discussion because I know you'll get angry at me. I think it was a really dumb financial decision to buy that pipeline. I think he was crazy. They were crazy to do it, but they did it. And they're still bitching at him? What more are you supposed to do?
Two quotes here, and then we'll get Mike in. Canadian National Resources Executive Vice Chair Steve Lott told reporters after his one-on-one meeting, or I guess his group meeting rather, with the Prime Minister yesterday, quote, "Albertans get along with everybody pretty well. You could never tell because all they do is bitch and moan when it's a Liberal government or an NDP government. You don't normally see that sort of thing happen. I do appreciate the federal government, stepped in and bought TMX to make it happen. So it's not like they're doing nothing, but it's not going to solve the situation today. No, because you know what? Steve Lott of Canadian National Resources. Generally speaking, in the words of H.L. Mencken, for each and every complex solution, there is a simple answer that is almost always wrong. Exactly. You can't solve it just with a snap of the finger. And Sarah Herlovson, a Calgary health worker who was out in the protests against the Prime Minister, says, "Come out and talk to us and hear what we have to say. I want him to pay attention." Meanwhile, at the same protest, it's important to mention, there were two people from Calgary, actually not two, many people from Calgary holding up signs, and you can see them, and we'll post them on the Facebook page. One woman is holding up a sign that says to Justin Trudeau, "Your mom banged Mick Jagger." And she's wearing, that was really nice there. And then her husband writes, "And Fidel Castro," and he's wearing a T-shirt that says "Trudeau come west" with a noose hanging from his a branch. And the wife is wearing a sweatshirt that says "Low class oil trash." So, yeah, come outside and listen. How about you guys open your fucking books or your digital subscriptions, or actually just do some independent research and find out how much Rachel Notley and Justin Trudeau have done for you, and quit bitching about how great Stephen Harper and his government were because they gave you sweet tweet all. Like, let's back it up a TikTok here, folks, and take a good hard look at 10 years of Tory rule and the fact that the economy shrunk. There was nothing built. I would venture that Rachel Notley and Justin Trudeau have been a hell of a lot more demanding on this industry in terms of wanting to succeed than any conservative politician in the last 20 years. Mike?
Listen, I'm not going to lie to you guys. I don't really care about the pipeline, but what I do care about, what I even care about, I'm just going to point out, it's politics, right? You said it, Cameron, and about a third of the way through your rant, you said something about, you know, they don't like it because it's a Liberal government and the NDP, and that's exactly it. That's all it is. People are going to hate Trudeau because they hate Trudeau, just like we're probably always going to look at the bad things that Stephen Harper did, call him Cheddar Harper, and that's it. Like, we're going to look at the negatives. I mean, on my Facebook page, you know, I've got some older people that I don't know how they got on there, but basically all they post is just memes making fun of Trudeau, and there's no point in engaging them because nothing's going to change their mind. They don't like him. And that's just politics. The guy with the noose on his shirt, and he had his kid with him too.
Yeah.
Did their kid with them. They don't like him. There's nothing Trudeau's going to do. They're going to blame everything on him, and that's fine. And that's part of being a politician. You can't have thin skin. People are going to blame. If you're a politician and your approval rating is, let's say a really good approval rating is 60%. That is a really good approval rating. That means 40% of the people hate you, and you have to just deal with that. And that is what it is. And in Calgary, you have people out there protesting. You said there was 2,000. Probably 1,800 of them didn't really have a vested interest or they didn't understand what they were, why they were there. They just don't like Trudeau, and fine. Like, you have to just move on from that.
No, no,
it's so laughable, though, that Albertans don't usually complain. It's like, what? They're the whiniest of all the provinces. They're always
probably bitching. Are. They probably,
right?
I mean, they're not
more
as smug
than anybody.
As, yeah, they're not as smug as Ontario, but they definitely complain a lot.
I don't know. Are we smug?
We're pretty smug.
Yeah, honestly, I think
it
we're
comes
sort of
from
like,
being
whatever.
The greatest
we
province
like
in Confederation.
Well, honestly, I don't have a province that I hate, but if everywhere you go, you've got, you know, I don't know. The Newfoundlanders,
I don't hate Alberta.
Like
they burned down. I don't hate them. I feel bad for that. But
I don't hate them either, but man, they whine a lot. And who's the guy who said, oh, we don't normally complain in this province? Like, what? You complain about everything.
Well, one of the things they're complaining about, of course.
When don't you complain?
One of the things they also are complaining about, because of course everything is the Liberals' fault, is Bill C-69, which will be killing the National Energy Board that is responsible for assessing whether or not projects can go through. So it kills Bill C-69, which these protesters, I'm sure all of whom are incredibly educated about both the parliamentary system and the legislative process, and in fact, the content of multiple bills. I have no doubt these are educated people, those with their white trash or oil trash shirts that they're wearing. But the bill will kill the National Energy Board, replace it with the Canadian Energy Regulator. It removes responsibility of the National Energy Board for assessing the impact of projects such as TMX or the Trans Mountain Pipeline. And it gives it to a separate body called the Impact Assessment Agency of Canada. And apparently it's very problematic in the view of these protesters, because there is no specific mention made in terms of how things are assessed of the potential economic benefits. So things like jobs created, investment spurred, provincial economies, you know, the impact there. But instead, this is the horror, folks. The assessment agency will measure factors that include environmental obligations, our commitment in respect of climate change to the intersection of sex and gender with other identity factors. It will also engage with Indigenous peoples, you know, whose land we stole how many thousands of years ago. Yes, this is all a problem. But if you can't, Justin Trudeau didn't prevent the building of the pipeline. The Federal Court of Appeal did. And at the end of the day, if we can't properly engage with the stakeholders who we want to run a pipeline through their province or their jurisdiction or their territory, then we probably don't deserve to build it anyway, even though I'm a huge fan of it. I just think that we need to keep some perspective here, because it's, you know, you can talk about the public interest, but public interest doesn't just involve a pocketbook conversation. And then they're all ticked off because, and I'm sure I'm telling this to our listeners in Alberta who know nothing but the most about this bill. They're ticked off because the environment minister would, after she receives, or he or she rather, it receives the impact assessment of a project like a pipeline, would have the final say whether or not it goes through. And they, of course, have to measure the public interest. And that's where the comment the qualifier about health, socioeconomic factors, impact on economies is all weighed. So they've got their panties in a twist about that with respect to individuals who wear panties.
All right. What now?
Yep.
All
the
right.
Old oil sands.
The oil. You know something, though? We can't fly planes without oil. We just can't. And unless, you know,
that's good thing we have such great relationships with Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. And by the way, Donald Trump, how about you give us some, you want to buy oil from somebody that isn't bone sawing journalists to death? We're right up here. Come fly over the Great White North or Great White North of Fort McMurray, Alberta, and see what we can offer you down there. But yeah. Okay. Stories of the week. Leanne, you're up first. And I think this is the lead in to your story.
I was with the president of Finland and he said, we have much different. We're a forest nation. He called it a forest nation. And they spent a lot of time on raking and cleaning and doing things, and they don't have any problem. And when it is, it's a very small problem. So I know everybody's looking at that, to that end, and it's going to work out. It's going to work out well.
Okay, Leanne, there's your story of the week. What did you want to say about that?
Make America rake again. Honestly. I didn't make that up. I wish I could take credit for it. But honest to God, even Larry in rural Pennsylvania laid off coal worker, grade 9 education, is smarter than Donald Trump. He is so stupid. I can't even... I just don't understand, as for somebody who's as narcissistic and as thin-skinned as he is, why did he just go out and say the dumbest things he can think of? I love that the Finland prime minister was all like, I never said that. What are you talking about? And then all these people on social media in Finland are like, just like ripping on him. Photos of them, you know, raking. Oh, time to do my civic duty. I've got to get out to the forest and start raking. It's just like, Larry, in rural Pennsylvania, you deserve better than this guy. You are smarter than he is. Why do you believe and listen to anything he has to say? He makes shit up about goddamn Finland and forest fires. I can't. I have Finnish blood, by the way. There's a bit of Finnish in me.
You're like, like the Mia Hakkinen of the group. Hakkinen or whatever from Veep. I guess nobody else got the reference but me.
Oh, I love
me.
Her. She is my favorite character, my favorite little side character. She was so funny, that character.
She is.
I'll never understand why someone is obsessed with what people think of him and who tweets out about what a brilliant genius, what a stable genius he is.
Stable genius. Very stable genius.
Says, right? Consistently says some of the dumbest things you've ever heard,
and that
you must know is going to cause people to ridicule him.
Well, and I have to point out, so first of all, I posted a top 10 list of places that we get a lot of downloads from. Long Beach, California, looking right at you, right after talking about Calgary, but Long Beach, California, the reason why this story is so important is, of course, because the president made him when he was on the ground in the state, surveying the damage of the fires, which have been nothing short of horrific. There are people that are dead. Thousands are without their homes. Malibu looks like the threshold of hell. He was talking about raking forests. Really bang up job. And also, he also dumps on, he said earlier in the week that basically he would maybe not fund, or maybe they'll cut off funding for California if they don't get their forest maintenance under control. Here's the thing, folks, 97% of the forests in California are actually managed by the federal government in some way, shape, or form.
I know.
Or private industry.
Stupid thing.
Yep. Yep, but it's all their fault.
And also, that was actually, never mind. But
no, say it. Say
the things that he, well, the things that he said about the forest fire, blaming the forest management was just such bullshit, because it wasn't even a forest fire. They don't think that's how it started. It was some sort of electrical thing, and it was mostly in not totally urban areas, but you know what I mean? Like,
it's maddening.
Is where I just want to fly and knock on the White House door and kick the shit out of them. Anyway.
Okay, Mike.
Okay, so I'm going to preface my story of the week by saying, after university, I lived in Japan for a couple years, and one of the things I learned there after I'd been there for a couple years is I tended to view tourists a lot differently, right? So like when I first moved there, you learn new things, but after you've been in a foreign country for a while, you start to realize that and I was part of this problem too. A lot of people that come from the West, they tend to think that they know better, or they know what's best for people in a place. So they'll come and they'll notice a difference, or they'll notice a culture shock, and they'll be like, oh my God, like I can't believe they do it this way. This is so stupid, kind of thing. That's, you know, and then you start to get kind of like, you start to see these entitlements, right? So you see people traveling and they bring their entitlements with them. And after a while, you just kind of laugh at them and you ignore them. But nothing is more entitled than the idiotic 22-year-old American who went to the Senegalese island, which is one of the last islands of uncontacted peoples in the world, with the plan of converting them to Christianity. And he was on the island for less than a few minutes when they killed him with arrows. And I just think, I'm not saying it's hilarious, because like a guy did die, and he's obviously just kind of like, when I say he's stupid, I mean like what he did was stupid. And obviously he thought he understood what he was doing. But seriously, like, what the hell are you doing? Like, why would the level of entitlement and the level of just like misreading a situation that has to take place for you to go to an island and get like killed by arrows within, you know, minutes of arriving. And I was reading about it today, and the guy's been planning this for years. Like, this is what he's doing, right? This is like his lifelong dream, is to go to the Senegalese people and convert them to Christianity. Like, and when you read about it, like, his friends were like, yeah, man, if that's God's plan, you should totally do it. Dude, like, I understand that you, well, I'm not talking to him because he's no longer with us, but anybody else that thinks that they know, you know, the Indian government really clearly was like, this is illegal, do not go to this island. And there's evidence that this kid in his emails was like purposely using code words because he didn't want any intelligence service to pick up on his emails, like, so that the government would find out what he's doing. So he understood, like, he, this guy was so entitled and he was so sure that he was right. And then he just arrives and immediately is like littered with arrows. And I think it's just, it's like people that get eaten by sharks, right? Like, leave the sharks alone and they won't eat you.
So, yeah, well, and don't put chum in the water.
Yeah. So, dude, RIP, man. Like, see you later.
Well, maybe he earned his wings. But I do want to say something that I found really interesting. Bob Ray actually tweeted something, and it was called, it's from this guy. I encourage everybody to look at it because I won't read the whole thread. But on this, it's by a guy named Respectable Lawyer, and his Twitter handle is Respectable Law. And he says, there's been a lot of talk about the missionary killed by the natives of North Sentinel Island. They're probably so aggressive because of this weirdo Maurice Fidel Portman. So here's a big thread about this creep and some facts from my decade-long obsession with the island. And basically, I won't spoil it, but basically he did stuff. This British guy came over and like measured their genitalia, like put them in like homoerotic poses and like, so they were welcoming at some point. And then I guess at one point he like kidnapped some old people and some kids and fucked them up. And so it was shortly after that that they really started to resist mankind. Thank you, Mr. Portman. Not too sure. Maybe you and your missionary friend there can have a good conversation about what went down now that he is he's contacted them more recently than you have. All right, my story of the week. Well, here's my lead in.
So when you do the new carriers, as we do and as we're thinking about doing, would you go with steam or would you go with electromagnetic? Because steam is very reliable. And the electromagnetic, I mean, unfortunately, you have to be Albert Einstein to really work it properly. What would you do?
Yes, sir. You sort of have to be Albert Einstein to run the nuclear power plants that we have here as well.
So that's just a brief clip.
Mike had some sort of issue in which he had to leave.
Oh, okay, no worries.
Maybe they were coming after him with poison arrows and he had to flee.
Right. Okay.
But he had to go. It's you and me, baby.
Okay. Anyhow, this is great because of two things. One, Trump is such a moron during his Thanksgiving phone calls to troops who are stationed that he actually insults the military by insinuating they're too stupid to figure out how to run electromagnetic carriers. So that's number one. Second, the best part about this clip is he's talking on speakerphone, but he's holding up a receiver to his ear. So I'm not, yeah. I don't know how it works over there in Mar-a-Lago. I don't know if maybe, I don't really understand, but maybe you have to be Albert Einstein at Mar-a-Lago to figure out how to work the phones. But I think I love the officer's response to him when he's like, well, you sort of have to be Albert Einstein to run the nuclear power plants that we've got here. I was like, yes, that is so great. So that's my brief story of the week.
It was pretty great.
It really was.
He is honestly a complete moron.
He is. He is. No,
like, he just really is. Like, and you know what? I think I've said this before. You're allowed to be an asshole, and you're allowed to be dumb. But you can't be a dumb asshole.
No.
Right? That's just not allowed.
No, he is definitely a dumb asshole. So on that happy note, want to wish a happy Thanksgiving to all of our listeners in the United States. And we will be back here next week for our first session of December. I will point out that we are only going to do two shows in the month of December.
What?
All right. Okay. Maybe we'll do three. Just because Leanne said that.
Deprive our fans.
The last show, though, is going to be a question show. So what I want you guys to do is send email questions to Leanne and Mike and me, or post them on the Facebook page. The email address is CanadianPolitique, CDNPOLITIQUE@gmail.com. We will answer them in our last show of 2018. We will read them out. And you will be the ones who get to decide what we talk about. And how good is that, Leanne?
By the way, the questions that I would like them to ask me are variations of this question.
Okay.
What makes you so awesome?
I will say that Leanne,
okay, see ya.
I love the fact that Leanne, I think we need to move into t-shirts, because like everybody seems to adore Leanne. I hear this regularly from people that actually send emails in, or who you are the fan favorite. Mike and I are apparently the chum.
Oh.
We're the ones who, if we were in a boat,
that might be because I...
the Senegalese or wherever it was, Sentinelese or whatever it is, they'd shoot us with arrows. Leanne, you would be the one queen.
You know, they may change their mind after this show, after I said Michelle Rempel can blow me. But anyway, I got to go.
Ciao.
Good talking to you. Thank you, fans. Goodbye.
Bye.